boy. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it, Michael? Can you feel it, Dan?
I feel it.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a teaching hospital. It's locus coeruleus. That pretty rain is,
Are you kidding me?
It's an S sound.
I've been saying coeruleus for the last 8 shows I've done.
I know. And when I called you Pig Boy, I wasn't being insulting, but it's like on King of the Hill when they call Bobby Hill Pig Boy, and the politician is going to go, it's George Bush, is going to go shake his hand. He's like, is that pig heart transplant boy or saved from drowning by a pig boy? I don't know, Pig Boy. But you have pigs, right?
I do. I have American guinea hogs.
It sounds like something you could put in your pocket. Is it?
Just about, yeah. It's a very small breed of hogs. They're a heritage breed. They're fantastic. They're probably the best pigs temperament-wise. They're the nicest things in the world. I just had a litter, actually. I think it was Saturday. And I can go in there immediately after they're born and mess with the piglets, and the sow doesn't care at all.
Mess with the piglets? What, like poke them in the eye? What are you doing, man?
So what I do when they're
mess with the piglets.
Well, they're so soft, so you have to pick them up and you have to pet them.
That's not messing. That's loving them.
That is. And when they're first born, I try and make sure that they all find a nipple on the sow. Because I don't want any of them to die. Yeah.
I'm looking at a picture of somebody's poodle sitting on top of their guinea hog. I don't think that whatever breed Mark Edge has would probably eat the poodle.
Yeah. Pigs are mean. Pigs are the worst.
I have a little experience pig farming. When I went to the church farm school, the Episcopal Boys Boarding School that I went to in the 70s and 80s. We worked on the farm, and we went to the church, and we went to the school. So we had to work on the farm, and more than twice I had to shovel out dead baby pigs that had been killed by their mother before the mother ate them. Ever have that happen? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the first litter I had on the farm, it was 0 degrees out, and she was out in an open-sided barn. It's basically just a lean-to, which had a lot of straw in it, but she had like 9 piglets, and a few of them wandered away, and they froze to death, and then I went over. The first one, I counted them, there were 9 of them, and then they came back the next day after school, and there were 7, and I was like, what happened? I couldn't find any trace of them, and then I found a dead one again, so I pulled it out, and then I was figuring out, what am I going to do with this, because I don't want to throw it over the fence near the animals, because I don't want any predators to come by. When I came back to go and pick it up to move it somewhere else, she was munching on it. It was the grossest thing ever.
Yeah. But, you'd also use pigs to get rid of your enemies. Like, you know, it's in these 3 or 4 gangster movies where, you know, somebody murders one of their enemies and then just throws it to the pigs, because they will eat, apparently, well, they'll eat a skeleton, like a person down, and then eat the skeleton, right? Or not?
Mm-hmm. I don't know about skeleton, but they'll eat anything.
Mm-hmm. Which is one of the main reasons people have them for food, other than that they're delicious and they're actually better for you than beef, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Contrary to less popular fatty opinion, animal fat's pretty good for you.
Although I don't know how good bacon is for you, but pork is pretty good for you. Yep.
Yeah. It's weird, man. I don't have a lot of connection with farmyard animals, to be honest. But I don't know, man. I find it kind of interesting. I always find it weird how pigs are one of those kind of, they're one of those kind of animals where, like, you know, like, there's a lot of religions and stuff that consider them to be unclean and things like that, and they won't eat them, but you don't really get
two-thirds,
that with a lot
of them. Two-thirds of the Abrahamic religions, the Jews and Muslims, will not eat them.
Yeah.
I'm not actually sure what the reasoning is for it, to be honest.
I think it's because when those religions were forming their rules, there was no refrigeration, and pigs, if you know, if the meat's not refrigerated, it's very easy to get parasites like worms and things like that that will kill you. So you know, they were considered unclean.
Yeah, I think that's right.
You guys heard the David Cameron thing, didn't you? I talked about on one show after it happened with Jim
He's
Jesus.
He's your president, right? Is he your president over there in England and Scotland?
Prime Minister, yes. Yeah. There was a book that came out about him by this guy, Lord Ashcroft, who was basically trying to embarrass him. Yeah, about him putting a member in, of himself in a dead pig's mouth. Which, you know, it was weird, man, but there was actually serious allegations about tax things in that book, but all the newspapers jumped on the pig thing for some reason.
Well, of course. So, Nick, you sold your first yak meat recently, right? You're being a good little capitalist there?
Yes, I am, though I am licensed by the Oregon Department of Agriculture.
We're not going to make fun of you about that. We're just going to joke about that in general. I liked what somebody was saying, is maybe Jim Babb, that you could go sell stuff at Porkfest and it would work against you that it's past state inspection.
Yeah, probably. That's right.
I want me some unlicensed bacon. Yeah. Well, that's actually in Libertarians Against Humanity, Jim Jesus's Cards Against Humanity expansion pack. You can go to libertariansagainsthumanity.com. There are a lot of references, actually, to Freedom Fiends things, and some to Nick. There's there's a card in there that says, "A 15-year-old yak farmer who knows more about Austrian economics than you do." And I think you're 17 now, but
yeah.
But there's also a card of, I think one is buying unlicensed bacon at Porkfest with Bitcoin is one of the cards, or uninspected bacon.
There you go.
But without the state to inspect it, what will happen?
Well, Nick, is your stuff inspected? Did the guy inspect or just come out and charge you?
Well, it's interesting. So there's two levels of inspections and licensing. To be able to sell meat, it's supposed to be, if it's USDA regulated, it's supposed to be inspected. The slaughter and the processing of the meat is supposed to be inspected by a USDA inspector. But yaks are USDA exempt from that. So only the Oregon Department of Agriculture here has to license me for retail. So the meat's not licensed. I am.
Yeah. The Oregon Department, that's a thing?
Oregon, yes. Not Oregon. Oregon, like the state. Did you think we meant like Oregon, like internal organs?
Yeah.
No, Oregon. 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 Right. Isn't that Oregon? Isn't that how you say it?
No, it's Oregon.
Oregon?
It's like or again.
Like I thought you said the Oregon Department.
Yes, the Oregon Inspector.
But these regulations are kind of nonsense. I remember there was a show called Moonshiners, and it was on. It was about these guys, in the Appalachian Mountains, and they were like moonshining. And I remember there's one episode where the guy went to visit someone who had actually gone legit, and he was showing him all the hurdles he had to jump through just to make his moonshine. And he even had an FDA approved rake. Do you know what I mean? They had to even approve the rake. That just seemed crazy to me.
It made you just want to go illegitimate. I mean, that whole thing just seemed like an ad for moonshining, except that, some of them get caught and serve some serious prison time for moonshining. I mean, it's like, you know, you'd probably be better off having some crack and machine guns, but maybe not.
But then you could see the skill of those guys because I remember, I think it was the same place he went to, and he was just getting unmarked jars of moonshine, and he was able to shake it, and just by like the bubbles and how big they were and like when they disappeared, he was pretty much dead on every time about what the volume of alcohol was in it every time, which shows that the guy's got some serious talent with what he's doing.
Well, those guys are all Scottish, aren't they?
Oh, well, that's why
I think they are.
It's our fault. I think a lot of those, there was a lot of Scottish and Irish that moved over to those places. And then, we just got rid of some people. We were like, you can go there. That's big. It's almost like as well, that's how Australia got started, because there was a bunch of people that we couldn't be bothered with. And we were like, well, we'll just send you to this to this tropical island. I mean, it seems weird. It seems like we should have left the criminals here and we should have all gone to Australia.
I don't know, man. Australia has more animals that can kill you than any other place on Earth.
Yeah, that does scare me a bit, actually.
And, like, their prime minister, like, went swimming one time and got swept out into the ocean and disappeared and died. And not many Americans know that. Do you know about that, Dan?
No, I don't know that one.
Yeah, Google it. Yeah, it was, I don't know, 20 or 30 years ago. But isn't that bizarre? Like,
that's so weird.
Yeah.
They don't have a Coast Guard?
I guess not, man. Or if they do, they're... Yeah, I mean, I could not imagine... In this, you know, an American president going swimming and getting swept out to sea and never being found again. It just wouldn't happen. Although I can't imagine it happening in, you know, any country, really. But because presidents are usually surrounded by people who treat them like they're more important than anything on Earth. You know, that, it's all part of the collective hallucination that props up government. Like, you watch any of these History Channel shows about, like, the history of the Secret Service and Air Force One. I mean, the amount of, like, redundancy and perfection and cryptography that goes into, like, flying the president's jet across the country, you know, it's mind-blowing. And it's really, there's no reason for it. Because if the president disappears, another one pops up instantly. You know, it's there's a whole system in place to make sure that it's so important. They have to have one. It's not important.
There's something like that here, and it's like, I think it's like certain members of the royal family, like, aren't allowed to fly in the same plane in case the plane crashes and there's no heir to the throne. There's some weird rule like that I've heard.
Yeah, that's one of the, like, 50 rules of presidents moving about the world here.
It just seems so pointless.
Corporations do that, too. Like, you know, they won't put, you know, two of the board members on the same plane.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know that. It's kind of strange. It's strange the lengths they go to like, and it seems pointless as well.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like creating importance. Although, I guess in a corporation or a big company, maybe they would be more important and indispensable.
Maybe.
Maybe. All right. Band whistling.
That was me.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Fiends. I'm talking about pigs. Pigs is good. So, Nick, you're a freedom-loving, anarcho-yakitalist, teenage pig farmer. Are most of the people your age that you know, are they as ambitious and self-starting as you, or are they just kind of sit around, like, liking things on their smartphones?
There's an interesting balance. I don't know what the rest of the country and the world's like, but I actually have
lazy. Lazy, just liking things on their smartphones.
I actually do have a good number of friends that are doing stuff. I have a friend who's actually raising the same kind of hogs I am. He's almost caught up to me on how many pigs he has, but not quite.
Is it a competition or is it a conversation?
It's more of a conversation. I'm actually going to go over to his place tomorrow. I'm going to help him out building a pen. And he's working on some stuff. He works way harder than I do, actually. He's more impressive in a lot of ways than I am, I think. I really respect him for the stuff he does, because he'd be fine if he was on his own right now. He makes enough money to live on his own, for sure. And he's still in school, too. So I'm impressed with him. And there are a few other kids that are doing some interesting stuff. And there are other kids who are like, I want to be doing interesting stuff, but they don't push themselves. And then there are the kids who are like, I don't really want to do anything interesting.
Yeah. So what new have you done interesting lately?
With your farming?
Or is it old interesting stuff?
I actually had some interesting encounters with our bull. I don't know if I talked about it last time I was on the show, but I have a bottle-fed bull, and never get a bottle-fed male animal if you're going to keep it for breeding. If you're going to castrate it, then that's fine, but if it's going to have testosterone pumping through it, you do not want it to be super friendly. You do not want it to be comfortable with you, because what this does is it makes it not afraid of you, right? This is why you don't feed wild animals. So when it's not afraid of you, it'll let you get close, and you're not going to really expect when it all of a sudden decides that you're competition for mating. And we had a very close situation to death with this bull. It was the scariest thing that's ever happened in my life. My uncle got a little too close. He had he may have had a few beers, and he was a little bit too confident.
Oh, no.
And he got too close, and he was being too loud. And that bull picked him up and tossed him.
He was trying to run with the bulls.
Yeah, yeah. Don't mess with the bulls or you get the horns.
Wow.
So I ran in there to help, and the bull tossed me, too. It was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really? Did that hurt?
It didn't hurt because I was so full of adrenaline, but the next after it wore off, I was sore. And the next couple days, I was super sore.
I've seen that, you know, that running with the bulls thing they do in Spain, and it just looks crazy, man. It's something that people say, oh yeah, I would run with the bulls, yeah, I would do that. No, you wouldn't, man. Have you ever seen the footage of that? It's insane, man. I don't even know who came up with that idea. Let's just let a load of bulls loose in a street and run about and see what happens.
Crazy Spaniards.
Darn Spaniards. We're talking about pigs there, and I was looking up some pig facts because, you know, I'm committed.
Pig facts.
Yeah, apparently in Bhutan, for years, they fed pigs cannabis because it grew all the time, and they decided to use it as pig feed, and they didn't realize that you can smoke that.
It was you, Michael, you were telling me about feeding something marijuana.
Yeah, there's somebody. I sent you a link of somebody who is using, selling pot-fed ham, and the ham does not get you high, and I don't even know if the ham gets the pigs high. I think it's like, you know, stalks and not the good parts of the weed, or maybe it's not even good weed, but it tastes reminiscent of marijuana. The meat does.
It would seem pointless to feed your pigs good weed.
Yeah,
it just seemed like such a waste.
Yeah, it'd be throwing pearls before swine. Yeah,
I'm learning so much about animals now.
Yeah,
they're become a awesome. Farmer myself.
Yeah, farming is fun. It's a lot of hard work, but if you just have a couple animals, it's super fun. It's fun to watch them. You get to know animal behavior, and it's really cool. I get to watch the pigs run around. They chase each other. They have their little clicks made. It's pretty interesting. It's like a soap opera.
You don't have any allergies, do you?
No.
Yeah, you're healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You're healthy.
Boo.
No, that's good. It's good, man. All right, we'll be back with more after this on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
is a liar, is a socialist, and his feet stinks. Is that not it? Oh, that's it. That's it. That's right. He is. And he does smell. Yep. So we're talking about pigs still, and Dan was telling us about how tattoo artists practice on pigs and or pig skin, not live pigs, right?
Really? Well, yeah, apparently a tattoo artist told me this before, because I'd asked him. I was like, when you start doing this, is it not a bit kind of awkward because you not need to like practice on yourself or find someone who's willing to let you use them as a human canvas? And he told me that he just would go to a butcher shop and he would get a load of pig skin, and that's what he would basically do, and he would just sit for hours just practicing tattooing on the pig skin. And he said it's the best way. He said every tattoo artist he knows, that's how they got started practicing, just get pig skin and just tattoo that, which I thought was kind of weird.
There's this tattoo artist named Erno in San Francisco, is really well known, like famous tattooist, Erno's Tattoos. He used to have barbecue parties where he would tattoo, he and his, like, I think it was people he was training, would tattoo with edible ink on, you know, light-colored meat, pork, and then they'd grill it and eat it. So I've seen this in action.
That would be really weird.
It's kind of creepy.
I'm going to the wrong barbecues.
There's a company now that's offering this service of framing your dead loved one's skin with tattoo on it. Have you seen this?
No.
It just instantly to my mind comes the, you know, the Nazi lampshades made from human skins with tattoos on them. But I guess it's voluntary and everyone agrees. It's I don't want it hanging away. I don't want my tattoos preserved and framed. I want to be thrown on a pyre within hours of dying and turned into ashes and then like spread all over, you know, some cop's front yard or something. I'm kidding.
A lot of my tattoos aren't even worth preserving.
Yeah, it might be fed to Nick's pigs. How's that? That probably wouldn't be good for him. I just want to be fed to Nick's pigs. How's that? See, if I put that in my will, Nick might be willing to honor it, but I think the law would try to get in between us.
Yeah, maybe we can figure it out extra legally.
Yeah.
I can sell the pork at Pork Fest.
anarchist fed pork. Michael Dean fed pork. I know people who would try that.
I would try that.
I would totally eat it.
Yeah.
That's like the definition of reincarnation, sort of, because then you're alive through the pig. And then someone eats the pig and then you're alive through them.
But you might catch my lungworm.
That's a risk we'd be willing to take just for anarchist fed pig.
So, speaking of different kinds of pigs, what's this about happy pigs being required in the UK?
Oh yeah, I read this and this seemed awfully strange to me. Apparently there's regulations in Europe where you have to keep farmers have to keep pigs mentally stimulated, and right, and researchers in, you know, Holland of all places,
of course.
They've been doing research on how to create a video game for pigs, which seems, apparently it's called Pig Chase, and they say it's similar to like getting your cat to follow a laser pointer.
Cats are frustrated by laser pointers because they can never catch them. They don't make them happy.
Really?
What did I say we're calling this episode? What pigs? Eat the pigs?
Yeah.
Right? All right. I'm sending it to the editor. So go on. Go on with your bad pig self.
I don't understand why there's regulations to keep your pigs mentally stimulated. I mean, are they that intelligent, Nick, that you would need to keep them mentally stimulated, or they get bored or something?
They are smart.
They are very smart. Pigs are geniuses, and they're very frustrating. But I have pasture pigs, so they're not, like, confined at all. So they would never get bored. They have too much. They have too much food to be bored.
Hmm.
Huh. Sounds like most Americans.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to be fed to Americans, so they have to be, you know, have so much food they're bored. And what is it? Somebody said that, like, you know, the Western world is the world where people have so much food and they're so gluttonous that the next step is to like gluttonize their animals, like foie gras, like force feeding fatty food to a bird and then eating it.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
You don't know that? Foie gras.
No, I've never heard of that.
Really?
Oh, I've heard of foie gras, but I didn't really know what it was, to be honest. I'm not. That's posh food.
It's liver, right, Nick?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Yeah.
You're a pig boy. You don't know about the birds.
No, I don't know about birds.
I'm too scummy to eat things like that. Do you know what I mean? That's just.
Well, you eat haggis.
I do eat haggis. I'm a stereotype, actually. I like haggis, I've got to say. And I don't think too much about what's in it.
What is haggis for those Americans who don't know what gross things you eat over there in Scotland?
Well, like, I don't know what they, like, there's sort of, there's all different types now, but, like, I think, you know, traditionally it was, you know, like a sheep's stomach it was usually done in. But, you know, they put oats and things like that in it as well. And I think, as far as I know, it's kind of insides. But even here you get vegetarian haggis as well, which is surprisingly tasty. I know that seems like, it seems like, how could there be such a thing as vegetarian haggis? But surprisingly, it's quite nice, actually. It's one of those things, a lot of people I know don't like haggis, you know, I don't know why, but I've got to tell you, man, see if you get a bit of haggis neeps and tatties. I know that sounds really what? Sort of... That's what you have it
say?
With.
Haggis dip, nips and toddies. Is that what you said? Nips and toddies.
Nips. It's basically haggis, potato, and turnip, but you call it haggis, nips, and tatties. That's the
spell that. Wait, nips? N-I-P-S?
N-E-E-P-S. Nips is a Scottish word for turnip, and then tatties is a Scottish word for potatoes.
Wow.
You should try it, man. It's surprisingly delicious.
No.
You might like it. Expand your mind, Dean.
Okay.
My brother actually worked at some kind of one of these sort of outward bound things, you know, one of these sort of things where people go to somewhere in the country and they do all these activities and things like that.
They torture children by feeding them haggis.
Well, apparently there was these American kids that had showed up, and a bunch of them thought that haggis were these small animals that run about.
Yeah.
And they weren't about to correct them because they found this to be too funny, and they had them out looking for haggis. They were like, you'll find them, they're these kind of small animals, you know, with four legs, you'll see them running around, and they actually had them out searching for haggis. Oh, racist.
Wow. Racist. That's funny.
I know, I'm a stereotype when it comes to stuff like that, but I mean, you've got to just, you've got to embrace your traditional food.
No, I don't.
Go ahead. We don't tell foreigners about haggis, we tell them about snipes and boomers.
Yeah.
Do you know what a snipe is?
No,
it's a
bird.
It's a bird, yeah.
It's a fictitious bird, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I almost got sent on a snipe hunt once. Yeah, I actually believed it for a little while. And then the other thing, which actually these things do exist, are mountain beavers, or we call them boomers here. They live out, they're like little rodents. I've never seen one. They have little tunnels out in the woods. And I've told people about them. Nobody believes me that they exist, but it's fun to try and get people boomers. To hunt from them. Yeah.
Boomers. So the snipes thing, is that just something you make up just to wind people up or something like that?
Yeah.
I see. Nice. I mean, we have a Loch Ness Monster, which I'm sure is real. I've never actually seen it, but... Actually, I went on a school trip years ago, and it was like one of these big walking trips, and we were walking around like Loch Ness, and... You know, it was just that way where everyone was like, I can see it, it's there. And it was like a boat or something like that. And you get people that are really into this that really believe that it's there. But, you know, there's been theories that because Loch Ness is huge and it does, like, you know, eventually get out into the sea and things like that. So there's people that theorize that it is some kind of, you know, some kind of creature left over from maybe sort of the dinosaur times or something like that, that maybe did appear at one time but could be dead now. I don't know. I think it's been perpetrated mostly to get tourists in, to be honest.
Yeah.
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 It was an episode of The Simpsons, wasn't there, where Mr. Burns drained Loch Ness and captured the monster?
Probably.
I'm choosing to believe in it. I have to.
Yeah. So, Nick, you when you sold your first meat recently, right? Your first yak meat?
I did, yeah. I've sold pigs before, but yeah, this was the first time we've butchered a yak, which is super exciting. That's something I've been looking forward to for a year. You know, I finally actually made some money off of the yaks.
Do you have someone come in, butcher them, and dress them, or you do it?
No, I send it off to a place.
Yeah.
And they
send
do
it off
for me.
Living?
Yes, I send it to, I don't know where they slaughter the animals, but I don't think this place had their own slaughtering facility. I think they do it out on, I'm not sure. They have these things called mobile slaughters. So they slaughter the animal and then like field dress it. That's basically what they do. And then put it in a refrigerated truck and then take it to the processing facility. And then they cut it up after it hangs for a little while.
Hmm.
Do you have to detach yourself a little bit? Because I've never farmed, but I really like animals. And do you have to have a level of detachment because you know, like, these are going to get butchered at some point?
Yeah, I did 4-H for a long time. And I cried over the first couple lambs that I raised. It was sad when I had to lose those because the first one I had was like a dog. Like, it'd follow me everywhere. And then I had to sell it, and I was like, oh, this thing's going to die. It was the worst. But after two, I was fine with it. I'd stopped getting so attached to them.
After two, you lost your heart. You became a killing machine.
That's right.
Nah.
And I love the pigs. I love the yaks. I show them affection, and I like them. But I don't name them unless they're breeding stock. And I don't even name any of the yaks either unless they come with a name.
I one time in my life I killed an animal myself and ate it, and it was a bunny rabbit when I was like 13. Shot it with my dad's 22 in our yard, and I cried when we ate it. But you know, I can put this together in my head. I can eat meat. I love meat. I love animals. I know that they are animals, and I have no problem with the fact that I outsource their murder and preparation to someone else. That's how it works.
Animals.
All right, we'll be back at this trip to the market where you can buy meat.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hey, this is Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And, I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch, now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is the Freedom Fiends. I'm Dan Green. I'm here with Nick Hazelton. Michael Dean is somewhere. We're not usually sure where. He's gone to solve a very pressing liberty emergency. But she has to do from time to time. He puts on a cape with a big anarchist on the back and goes out and fixes all the liberty problems that are in the world. So he'll be back once he's sorted this. But speaking of liberty, I was thinking about this today because, like, I'd seen a link on a news website, and it was about It was about, I didn't know this, in Belarus they still have a dictator. Belarus is like one of these small European countries. And the guy that's the dictator is like grooming his 11-year-old son to be the next dictator, which is interesting. Apparently they call this guy Europe's last dictator. But it got me on to thinking about, like, you know, like you get these people who are like, say, I mean, hereditary rulers is one thing, elected rulers is another thing. These people in their lives aren't exactly very free, because, I mean, if you think about it, if you're like, say you're born into royalty, right? We have royalty here. Mm-hmm. If you're born into royalty, you're constantly, you know, you can't just walk about, you can't just do whatever you like. There's always got to be people around you, people are watching you and all this kind of thing. And then we wonder why this is even the same with presidents, you know, like if you're like a president or something, I mean, you can't just go down to the park looking like a bag of washing, you know, you have to look a certain way and stuff. I mean, I can walk about here looking a right mess and nobody cares. Mm-hmm. And I like that anonymity being outside. So that's what I was thinking, like, you know, people say, like, oh, why wouldn't they want us to be free? Why would they? Because they're not free at all in their lives, not even remotely. You know, they're constantly being watched by people that has to be. We were talking a little bit earlier in the show about how they have to plan out routes ahead of time and things like that. So that's what I was thinking. I mean, why would they? Why would they want anyone else to be free when they're probably in their daily lives the most unfree people that there are?
Yeah, right. It's a sour grapes mentality where nobody gets to have good grapes. I think that's where that comes from. Sour grapes. That is interesting. I've never thought about that, but yeah, I think I agree. That makes sense. If you're raised to be this, you know, the most important person in the country and you don't get freedom, then why would people that are lesser than you get freedom at all? Right? Shouldn't you have more of a benefit since you're the best and since you have to deal with all this, since it was your divine right from your family?
Yeah, exactly. And this hereditary rulers thing, I mean, there was a thing in North Korea recently, wasn't there? There was some kind of, I don't know, some celebration of something. I'm not sure what they've got to celebrate in North Korea, to be perfectly honest. You know, but they were trying to celebrate something. But then it's the same thing there, and like, I don't know, I find it so strange. I mean, people here love the royal family. I mean, I've got to tell you, I mean, Republican views are not that common here. You know, they are among some people, but there's a massive contingent of people in the UK that just love the royal family. And they think that we get some benefit from it. And for the life of me, I can't figure out what this benefit is. But, like, people think, you know, well, that person was born into that family, so clearly, they've got a right to rule us. And I mean, I know you can say they don't have that much power, but I mean, how much of my tax money goes to their big palaces that are dripping in gold and all this nonsense? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's pretty. I don't. That seems so foreign to me, right? That's from being here in America. We don't have royalty, but I mean, maybe you could make the argument that we have temporary royalty. They stay in the office for a little while and they are the royal family, but now it's totally different, right?
Yeah. It's
very different.
It almost seems like they're trying to establish that in America in some ways, because, you know, like you've got all the Bushes, you know, there was Bush Senior, yeah. W, and, you know, then there's Jeb. And then, I mean, I know the Clintons are, you know, well, they're married, but like then, you know, how long is it before Chelsea starts running for office? I mean, is that how these things get started? If so, you guys should be worried.
That's right. America will be a monarchy.
I mean, what happens then? What happens then in 100 years when you've got the Clinton dynasty and the Bush dynasty? There's a dystopian thought for you, Nick. You will not sleep tonight.
No, I won't.
I'm glad I could help. We'll try and make this more fun in the second hour and not worry about the Bush dynasty that's going to rule you.
Yes. Try.
We'll try. Have a bit of news and then we'll laugh some. And then we'll scare you again. If I can't sleep, neither can you.
Sour grapes.
Oh, I've got it as well.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
I thought he was a queen. What, Nick?
Never mind.
Talk radio?
That's right.
Okay.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through libertarian re-education centers, low orbit ion cannon, high atop financial beast plaza on the artificial satellite LibAir 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. And you can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org. And we're back with the second hour. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. You know why it's called BIPCOT 2017, right, Nick?
LibAir 2017?
Yeah, LibAir 2017. Yeah. Because go ahead.
It's when the satellite or the radio waves are going to reach Alpha Centauri, right?
Yeah, it's when the aliens will become aware of us. They'll hear the Freedom Fiends. They'll say, "We've been monitoring this planet for 100 years. This is the first intelligent life we've heard." And they'll come down and give us their superior technology to defeat or just ignore the state. I'm looking forward to that date. Because it does take 4.3 light years. Since we've been on for 2 years now. So it's when we've been on for 4.25 years, they will have heard us. Then I don't know how long it takes. I think they could get to us instantly, somehow. I think they could email their technology, and it'll get here faster than email would at that distance, which would also be 4.3 years. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So I wanted to talk about Brian Eno, and I rushed back from my dinner to do so, but I'm going to let you guys, I'm just going to go, like, I don't know, alphabetized by Brian Eno files while you guys talk more. And then when should I come back? How long is this going to take? No. How long do we need?
We could probably do it in a segment.
All right. Yeah. So a long segment. All right. I'll be back after this long segment to talk about Brian Eno. Worms. Oh, Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist, and his feet stink. There you go. You know, and if Free Talk Live can spend a whole hour talking about people who are such losers that they collect AOL install discs like they did today, we can talk a whole hour about pigs, which we did. So, worms.
No, what Michael's referring to is Nick and I were talking during the break, and I've been listening to a lot of the philosopher Alan Watts. I've listened to that guy for years. Died in the 70s. He was like an English guy, and then he'd moved to the US. And he brought up a really interesting thing that I hadn't really thought about before. And he was saying, like, you know, in America, most people are Republican-minded, and I don't mean the political party. I mean in terms of not having a monarchy. And he brought up the fact that there's that, but a lot of people have, say, I'm not getting down on Christians here, I'm quite a spiritual guy, but like certain conceptions of Christianity, I mean, I was raised Catholic, so that's sort of my reference point. So a lot of those conceptions, say, of something like Catholicism, where God is like, you know, he's like a monarch. So they're Republican-minded in terms of politics. But then in terms of religion, some people are like, well, God's the ruler. He's basically the monarch. So it's like you have a Republican view of society and the world. But then in terms of the universe, you have like a monarchical view. And what was interesting as well that he brought up, which I didn't realise really before, he was talking about, like, say, royalty. If you think about royalty, the throne is usually against a wall, you know, because if you're the person that rules you, a lot of people aren't happy about that. Mm-hmm. So no one can get behind you. And it's the same in, like, Catholic churches, you know, like the altar has got a wall right behind it. You know, it's almost the same thing, you know, which I found quite interesting. And I find that quite weird that some people have that sort of conception, you know, like that it's you know, you're Republican in terms of the world, in terms of this material, but in terms of the universe, you're essentially a monarchist.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think that's partly because we, you know, I'm an American and I don't really believe in government, but and I'm not Christian either. But a lot of people, I think, believe that God is the supreme ruler, right? And then, especially Christian anarchists would say that he is the only ruler, and therefore we can't have rulers on earth, and that would be the opposition to monarchy and government from the Christian anarchists. And then I think it's the same thing for Christian statists, where why they oppose monarchy is for the same reason, because they don't really believe that the government and the people running government are rulers.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about. Like, I mean, if you think about this way, I've heard two sort of different conceptions of that. You know, I've heard some Christian anarchists say, well, we don't obey man's law, we only obey God's law. But then I've heard other anarchists who are, say, maybe more atheist or something, who have said, you know, we don't obey anybody's laws, you know, regardless of whether it's a man or a deity or whatever.
Yeah, one of the things, I think this is a classical, maybe not anarcho-capitalist, but this is a classical anarchist line, especially for the, I think the commies like to use this one, is no gods, no masters, or no priests, no kings.
Mm.
That's a communist thing, I think.
Those darn commies. Actually, I heard Ben Stone, fellow Freedom Fiend, I heard him say something interesting once, and he was talking about that bit in the Bible when basically, you know, Satan comes to tempt Jesus, and he shows him, like, all the kingdoms of the world, and he says to him, you know, you can have all this, I'll give you all this, you know, if you just bow down to me. And every time Jesus refuses. And the interesting thing Ben said about that was, he said that, if you'll notice, Jesus didn't question Satan's ability to give him those kingdoms. He didn't question that at all. He accepted the fact that they were his to give. So you can read that in a way that, you know, governments are, say, I know it sounds weird, but you could read that in a way that governments are of the devil.
Yeah, I love that argument. I loved when he brought that up. I was like, oh, that's genius. That's perfect. Like, and yeah, I think that in a lot of ways, if you follow down pretty much any belief, and especially religious beliefs, I think that you do get down to anarchism, or at least anti-government, right?
Mm. Yeah.
I think if you trace them back, you usually get down to something similar to the non-aggression principle.
Yeah, because even Jesus was like, you know, I mean, there's all these things, was Jesus an anarchist and all that, and, you know, you could go into that and you could talk about different passages and things, but, you know, if you remember the story when Jesus, you know, went into the temple, you know, and, like, he threw all the moneylenders out and all this kind of thing, you know. So, I mean, Jesus wasn't, if you read the Bible, he wasn't someone that was just like, oh, let's just accept all this and it's all good. You know, he was someone that was, you know, there was points when he was quite anti-authority, anti-establishment. He was a troublemaker. That's why they had to kill him, because he was causing too much trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I just find it interesting, because, like, I was brought up Catholic, and, you know, like, oh, the rules and the guilt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a bit too much for me, you know, but, like, I didn't lose a conception of God in that, you know. I spend every day, you know, in prayer and meditation and things like that, so I didn't lose any sort of conception of God. It's just that I wasn't such a big fan of the conception I was being given of it, you know, this sort of, like, big daddy's up there and he's not happy with you.
Yeah.
And he's judging you. You know, and you'd better behave or else. things are going to happen if you don't behave yourself. Mind your P's and Q's, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah, that's why, that's one of the reasons why I'm no longer Christian. I was raised Mennonite. Not, I wasn't really raised Mennonite, but that's where I came into religion, was as a Mennonite. And they're an interesting group of people, but we were very liberal. My family's a very liberal Christian family. And I abandoned my faith because of just reasons. I didn't think I could prove the existence of God, and then I still believe that. But one of my issues is the judging nature of a so-called loving God. But and I find that interesting, especially as being an anarchist, where that's something that I, as an individualist, right, I come into some conflict. You know, where do we allow somebody to judge and rule over us? And, you know, we can say that, and I think all anarchists will agree that people can't do it. And then I think it's an interesting argument to have whether we let God do that or not. And it's, you know, making the assumption that if God exists, does he have the right to rule over us? And I think that's an interesting philosophical quandary.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I mean, like, I still have, like, I was heavily inspired, like I still am, by, like, Buddhistic thought and things like that. Mm. I mean, that's one of the things I sort of, why I sort of went away from Catholicism, because I don't think that you'd necessarily have that, I don't think you have to have that conception of, like, a judging, ruling God. You know, I think there's, I don't think that has to be how it is. I think that's just one narrow viewpoint. It's just one conception of God, you know, that's, you know, been given for certain reasons. Because, you know, you can go back to, like, you know, how the church got started, you know, and a lot of it's to do with, you know, political power and things like that. So I don't think you necessarily have to have a conception of God that he's judging you and he's, you know, he's watching over you and wagging his big cosmic finger at you. You know, I don't necessarily think that has to be what God is, you know, and I think that's just one viewpoint. You know, it's gained a lot of popularity, but I think a lot of the reason why a lot of that kind of, mostly speaking from a Catholic point of view, because it's my experience and it's what I know. I think the reason why that's been so pervasive is because, I mean, again, I mentioned it earlier, the guilt, you know, there's the guilt and the fear that gets put into you about God. But then if God is love, then why would there be all this judgment? You know, why would, you know, that's the thing. If God is love and that's what we're starting from, then what's with all the fire and brimstone?
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
You know, that's the thing. I
totally agree.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, that's what I think, I mean, fear is such a big thing, and it, so a lot of people don't realize, but it completely runs a lot of people's lives, you know, because they don't think about it. And I mean, it's like, oh God, Catholicism, you used to, oh, confession and things like that, and, you know, and there's all these rules that don't make sense. Like, see the conception I was given when I was younger of, like, heaven, and it was like, you know, you'll be with your, some people like that idea, but I thought, spending eternity with my extended family and things like that, oh, maybe not. I could kind of do without that, you know. And I'll just say this before we go to the break, the idea of hell seems a bit too severe for me, because you never get out. It's like pushing in a thumbtack with a jackhammer. More after this.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
What is Brian Eno? Who can tell me?
I can do that. Brian Eno is an incredibly interesting musician and producer. He was started out in Roxy Music, Then he'd made a lot of solo albums. He's also produced like bands like U2 and things like that. He didn't invent ambient music, like those bands like Tangerine Dream and that came along before him, but he gave ambient music the name ambient music. And his philosophy of ambient music was fascinating because he basically said it's the kind of thing that could be on in the background and it could be ignored or engaged with depending on how you're feeling.
That's funny. I've been watching. There are two really good Brian Eno documentaries on YouTube that we're going to link. One is called The Man Who Fell to Earth, named after the B-movie starring David Bowie. But it kind of fits Brian Eno because he just came out of nowhere and, you know, invented or co-invented or was a pioneer in like 10 different genres of music, you know, from glam to ambient to chill out music to like rave music to, you know, early use of sequencers, you know, and like you said, he produced people like, you know, he produced records by David Bowie, Talking Heads, Devo, U2. You know, he played on Genesis records, and he's kind of an unmusician. Like when he came out, virtuosity was the thing. You know, the big bands were like Genesis, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Moody Blues. All these bands were like classical level performers. I've been really into him since about 1976, 1977. I got a hold of his albums, Another Green World, Taking Tiger Mountain by Strategy, and Here Come the Warm Jets, and just played them until the vinyl wore out and then bought them again and played them again. And I was just watching this full-length documentary. Here's why I'm living my dream, because I'm doing a radio show with my buddies. It's on a bunch of radio stations, but I can like stop, let you guys talk, and I go watch a Brian Eno documentary and then come back when you're ready. That's how it should be. So you know, this two-hour documentary, I had just paused at the place where a collaborator of Eno described Eno's take on ambient music, and it was almost word for word what you just said. Really? He basically said it was the music you could put on the background when you have friends over for dinner that you wouldn't really hear consciously until the silence between friends popped up, like, you know, till you had a lull in the conversation, then you'd be aware of the music. And but it's not Muzak, and it's not, you know, it's not musical wallpaper. It's very engaging music, but it can also be consciously ignored too. But the stuff I like that he's known for is more kind of pop oriented, but still with some ambient and still with just weirdness. I mean, he just was really weird, and he was not he kind of made a name for himself early on of saying, like, I am not a musician. You know, I'm a technician. I work with machines and happen to strum a little bit on a guitar and a piano. And that was an unheard of concept in 1972, you know, when he was doing Roxy music. It predates punk, really. Well, I guess the Stooges put out a record in 69, but it predated what a lot of bands in England were doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You like him.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember the first time I heard Ambient One music for airports, and it doesn't sound like a great title.
Music for airports, yeah.
But like, it's amazing. See, even if you're like, if you're outside, say, walking about, and you know, this is how I like to listen to ambient music a lot of the time. You know, like you're outside somewhere and you maybe put your headphones in, and even somewhere like a nice park or something like that. And you can almost, it's almost like the music sort of, it's almost like it describes or adds something to what you're seeing around you, to the actual, like, the landscape around you. And it's a hard thing to describe, but like it's something that I remember the first time I listened to it, I was like, it's not exactly music, it's kind of more tones and sound, but pleasing, if you know what I mean.
Well, it's kind of, that kind of goes along with too of the idea of life having a soundtrack. And now to everyone, life has a soundtrack because everyone has a mobile device that can play their collection of music in their earbuds. But you remember, like, you know, the first real like life having a soundtrack was the boombox in the 70s, you know, which went along with a lot of hip hop music. But, you know, people played whatever they liked on their boombox, which was, I don't even know if everybody listening knows what a boombox is. It's a big cassette player. I don't even know if everyone listening knows what a cassette player is. They probably do. But It was a big cassette player that took like 12 D-cell batteries that wore out quickly. And you get out of life out of the soundtrack, but you also bothered all your neighbors. And then it wasn't until the Walkman came out, which was a headphone-driven, portable cassette player that you could just have your soundtrack and not impose it. We'll be back.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a spider named after Brian Eno. I find that interesting. I guess people who discover new organisms get to name it. And, you know, Eno's kind of nerds music, so nerds probably discovered this spider. It's called Pseudocorina. Pseudocorina Brian Eno. But Barack Obama also has a spider named after him. The Aspothus Barack Obama. I can't pronounce this. But so these people are both socialists and have spiders named after them. Spiders are kind of creepy. Socialism is creepy. I love Brian Eno's music, but what did you say you read by him recently?
Oh, yeah. He wrote an article in the Guardian newspaper here, and it's a very left-wing paper, and it was in support of the Labour Party here as a new leader. And it's a guy called Jeremy Corbyn. And Jeremy Corbyn, he's not just your centre-left Tony Blair type. He's your proper socialist leaning towards communist hard left sort of guy.
Why do people think this time it'll work when all you need to do is look a couple miles down the road at Venezuela at the fact that nobody can get toilet paper or beer or food to see what the end game is with that?
No, it'll be different this time. It'll be different this time. That's what they always say.
Brian Eno will write a theme song for it. It'll work. Yeah, well, let's talk about, I don't want to talk about Eno's politics because it'll make me vomit, and it also reinforces my, I'll think he's square, and I think he's pretty cool, and I don't want to think he's square because I've said and I maintain that any politician, any musician or entertainer that backs any politician is immediately square, especially if they back one like that. But I don't know, you know, maybe he was dropped on his head as a kid. Maybe it's like part of what made him creative is part of what made him a commie, filthy commie, who knows. Ugh. So yeah, I mean, you know, took things like, you know, Sate and modern classical music and like simplify, like took the feel of it without the complexity of it. You know, a lot of it has the calm but engaging, you know. It's just it's not sleepy music. But it's cool, man.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, he actually, what's the song? I think it was it on Ambient 4? And it's called like something like Dunwich Beach. And it's some month in like 1960. And it's just that. So it's just like, you know, that it's based on somewhere at some time. And just by listening to it, you can kind of get pictures in your head of like a place and things like that. And it's incredible that you can do that just with sound.
Yeah, he does that a lot. He has a song on Another Green World. I think it's called Santiago Under the Volcano, but I'm not sure if that's what it's called, but I know that that's the first line of it, is Santiago Under the Volcano. And it's kind of ambient, but it's really not sleepy. It's like kind of ambient around a pop format. And, you know, I used to hear that as a kid, and I didn't even know where Santiago was, but I instantly was there under the volcano when I'd hear that song.
Yeah. Absolutely. Are you a bit lost with us, Nick?
Yes, very.
Well, Nick, I'd like to know, we were talking before the break a little bit about, you know, us old guys, like life has always had a soundtrack. Actually it hasn't for me because, you know, the Walkman first came out, God, what year was that? I didn't get one until he'd been out a while because I couldn't afford one. But they came out in the late 70s. I probably got one in 1985. I owned one. And before that, I was borrowing one. But before that, I had portable tape players. I always owned tape players. And actually, like, owned reel-to-reel tape recorders because I was trying to do, like, the stuff that Eno was doing with, like, tape delays and stuff that now, like, it's a plug-in, you know, in a software program that you download for free. But back then, you had to have equipment to do, and it took some cunning to do. But, yeah, when did you first have a portable music player, and what was it?
I'm a bit younger than yourself. I was born in 86. So, yeah. I remember, like, going to school and things and having, like, a cassette player Walkman, you know, so that's about as far back as I go. And then I remember the horrors of the portable CD player because it would be all right, but then, yeah, they would skip. If you walked the wrong way, it would just skip all the time. You could hardly hear anything. That's why when MP3 players came about, I was like, finally, man.
Well, I also remember that they had, they came out with, like, a second generation portable CD player. The CD players were like, I don't know, $200 or $250. And then they had one that was like $100 more that had like a little bit of skip protection memory built in. Like it would sample ahead for 5 or 10 seconds. And if your skip wasn't that long, it would correct it sort of. Yeah.
That was a nightmare. And then like, it was just so, I mean, even then the cassette players were, you know, they didn't skip, but then, you know, trying to find a song you wanted, you know, just put your finger on that rewind button. That was just, that was terrible. And then I remember when do you remember mini disc players?
Yeah, I really wanted to get a mini disc player, like, after they were kind of declining technology, but before you could get, like, you know, a hard disk MP3 recorder. And I really wanted one because they were like, they were the only way that was kind of almost within my budget to record like digital high quality sound. And I was saving up to get one used. And then all of a sudden the Zoom H2 came out, and I bought a Zoom H2 in 2006 or whenever they came out. And I still use it to record shows. I'm looking at it right now and it's the same one. It still works. And that was like $200 and it records like CD quality waves, you know. And when it first came out, like the SD cards for it were pretty expensive. Like, you know, a gig, which was, you know, not all that much. It was like a half hour or something, you know, was $40 or something. And now, like, you know, you can get a 32 gig one for like $12 or something. It's gone way down.
I mean, even things like,
thank you, capitalism.
Even in terms of, I've got a lot of synthesizers and sequencers and synthesizer snobs, hold your nose for a second, because now you can get things like the Korg Vocas, and you can get like a polyphonic one, a bass one, a drum one, and they're pretty cheap. They're only about, I think, something like 80 quid each, and they come with little wires and you can sync them all together. So if you don't have the money to buy like a big synthesizer, you can buy these one at a time and you can sync them all together, and you can get about 4 or 5 different ones. And it just shows that now this technology, which used to cost a fortune, I mean, when synthesizers came out, it was only people that had a lot of money that could actually afford them. But now this kind of stuff's available to anyone.
Yeah, and now it's kind of going the other way too, because there's a huge market, or this solid market for like modular analog synthesizers that cost a good bit of money, like boutique shops that create these and hand solder them. And, you know, people have like whole walls of these synthesizer modules together. It's pretty cool stuff. Search modular synthesizers and look at some videos on YouTube. It's pretty mind-blowing things out there, but it can get really expensive again.
Yeah, you can kind of get a bit obsessed with that.
And it's one of those things where, like, it's kind of built in to, like, stroke the addictive part of nerds' brains because, you know, you can always buy one more module. Your system is never complete.
Yeah. There's a documentary we talked about a little before. It's on Netflix called I Dream of Wires that's about that. And I remember even one guy who was like really into it, and he said sometimes you can do it, you can program it so there's no sound that comes out, but it just does something pleasing with the lights.
That's funny, man. That's really funny. Yeah, and you know, another, I want to talk a little bit about another pioneer kind of guy. It's Richard Stallman, one of the three kind of co-inventors of the Linux operating system, Linux or GNU/Linux, and he's also the head of the Free Software Foundation. You know, been pushing the pushing for software to be free. He is a socialist. He's admitted to that. God, why are all these like smart people? Especially
what's
when he was
like,
partially responsible for creating like one of the most open source, uncentrally planned like things ever, Linux. You know, it's proof that you don't need government planning for anything. But he's very into the what a lot of people call open source, but he takes it further and calls it free software. It has a slightly different meaning than open source. There's a really good interview he did today with we'll link this in the show notes. I'll have it linked in the show notes. He did an interview on Ernie Hancock's show, Declare Your Independence. And if, you know, I love Ernie, but he talks a lot, and I'm someone who talks a lot and gets criticized for interrupting my guests, but he does it more than I do. Like, I'm amazed sometimes that people stay on for the full interview, but he was on for the whole thing, and it was like it was the first time I've ever heard an interview with Richard Stallman, where I didn't like have anything bad to say about him. I'll still say that I think he's kind of fighting a losing battle with words, you know, with saying like, no, you can't call it Linux, it's GNU/Linux because it has my GNU system in it. You know, it's kind of like the market has spoken, everyone calls it Linux, and the, you know, him insisting that people call things free software instead of open source software, you know, it's kind of people call it what they call it. And we have the BIPCOT license, which is technically similar to both, but you know, doesn't allow governments using it. So you can go to bipcot.org for that. But it finally clicked with me. Like, I hear him and I'm just like, ugh, he's such a stickler. The Raspberry Pis are fine computers, but the bootloading sequence is not free software. So you're really not getting the full experience. And I'm like, what do you mean? It's a $25 computer that you can run anything, you know, that like you can go on the internet with. What are you talking about? You know, it fits in your pocket. And he's like, yes, but it's not perfect because the bootloading sequence is not free software. You know, it's not, it has some kind of like limitation on it. I'm like thinking like nobody using it notices that. And Ernie is like, I have one and my granddaughter doesn't notice that when I play with her with it. And, but here's the thing. It's like, here's what I got to say about Stallman. I have my hats off to him, and it finally clicked to me why he does what he does and why I shouldn't criticize it. It's the same reason I won't accept people criticizing me for not, like, joining, you know, like, working within the system. Like, people are like, why are you such an anarchist? Why aren't you willing to work within the system to get good people elected? And I'm like, and, you know, people are even like, you know, what you're asking for is complete, it'll never happen. And I'm like, maybe it'll never happen, but I'm going to keep yelling for it. You know, it's like pure anarchy, pure peaceful, no government. That's what I want. And he wants pure free software, not necessarily free from paying money, but free, like you can do anything you want with it. And like a stickler about the terms. So it's like somebody's got to do that, you know, and it does have a trickle down effect to the rest of the world and the rest of computer industries. Like computer industries know who Stallman is, you know, Microsoft and Apple probably have a division of like four guys in a room somewhere who deal with Stallman's ideas. Like, well, the guy's a pain in the butt, but people live, 1% of the people listen to him, so we have to listen to him, you know? What more could you hope for? We'll be back with the Redemption in the Third Act after this. I'm suffering from my art. My lungs hurt.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Want to contribute to liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Hi, guys.
Hello, here.
here on the Freedom Fiends show today. The daily show of the Freedom Fiends. So I guess I'll wrap up a little bit talking about people who are important in my life artistically and in other ways. I mean, like Stalin. I keep calling him Stalin because he's a commie. Stalin. Richard Stalin. You know, he's a commie, but he's like kind of a pure commie. I mean, he's a pure socialist. Like, he hates Barack Obama because Barack Obama's a warmonger. So, although I guess there's nothing un-warmongery about being a socialist. But, you know, I mean, where are all the anti-war leftists that were out barking at Bush in the street now that Obama's got the keys to the war? I don't know where they are. But so most of the people that I've really enjoyed in my life. Oh, I want to mention the guitar player in my band, Bomb. And there was a mistake last night. Chandler was talking about, or the other day was talking about the music on this show, and he thought it was all done by me on my computer. It's not. Some of it is done with Nima Vidati, and some of it is my old band Bomb, and some of it is my old band Slish. And the guitar player for my old band Bomb, Doug Hilsinger, recorded an album with this woman named Carolyn Beatty, who's a friend of mine. It's just the two of them. It's covering note for note the whole Brian Eno album, Taking Tiger Mountain by Strategy. But it's his own interpretation of it. It's their own. It sounds very different than the original. And Brian Eno actually likes the album. There's actually a recording on Doug's site, saucefawcett.com or .org, of Eno leaving a message on Doug's machine saying how much he liked it. But it's hard for me to recommend it because it's out of print. And the CD is $124 on Amazon. And Doug, like, didn't want anyone to, like, bootleg it or anything. So it's that old saying of that the guy from one of my publishers, O'Reilly Media, said something to the effect of, Tim O'Reilly said something like, artists have more to worry, artists should more fear obscurity than piracy. And that's words to live by right there, man. So everybody, it's like all the bands that I was always into, they never sold that many records. But it was like everyone who bought their record or made a cassette copy of their friend's cassette copy of their friend's cassette copy of it. Like everyone who had the record started a band, you know, like Velvet Underground, Ramones, Brian Eno, Sex Pistols, Minor Threat. Like most of them never even sold a million copies. Or if they did, it took 25 years to sell a million copies. But everybody who bought their records, you know, started a band. Like most of those bands probably sold more t-shirts than they sold records, you know, or some of the punk bands like sold more skateboard decks with the band's name on them than they ever sold records. Yeah. But, Dan,
I mean, when you say things like that, it makes me think about, I think we mentioned it once before, Daniel Johnson. I mean, yeah. Daniel Johnson, for anyone that doesn't know, you know, he's, singer-songwriter, his music was horribly recorded, but like, I mean, even if you look at, there was that cover album called The Late Great Daniel Johnson Discovered Covered, and it was bands that were influenced by him that covered the songs, and you just look at the track listing and it's like Bright Eyes, Death Cab for Cutie, Tom Waits, you know, like Mercury Rev, The Flaming Lips. There was all these massive bands that were influenced by his music despite how badly it was recorded.
Yeah, the only other songwriter I can think of that has influenced that variety of people, and probably a lot of the same people, would be Leonard Cohen. But Leonard Cohen was, you know, well known. He never sold, you know, I don't think he was ever in the top 40 or top 10. His song Suzanne might have been for a minute. But, you know, he's been covered by Tom Waits, Nick Cave, a lot of people. There are actually like five or six compilation albums to Leonard Cohen. But, you know, they were all really recorded well in studios, and, you know, he had a career, and he was not insane, and, you know, had managers and booking agents and things like that. But I like him a lot. We covered his song Suzanne, a very hard rock, thick, slow heroin version of it on my band Bomb's Warner Brothers record, 8 Fed Love. Been a good show, guys. Been fun talking.
Worms.
It's hard for me to get on. My throat's going to hate me tomorrow.
But
that's what happens, man. The show's got to go on. We had a cancellation. Somebody's internet was out.
But stream of consciousness radio.
Carry on, man. Yeah, what did we go from? List it really quick, Dan.
Pigs to hereditary rulers to God to Brian Eno to Linux.
Yep. To bands that sold more skateboards than records. Modular synthesizers.
Only on the Fiends.
Yep. All right, man. It's been an honor, guys. See you soon. Worms.